Hey, all, for this and some other episodes, if you want to see the unedited video of the Zoom call, go to patreon.com/philosophyimprov. It's entirely free to watch. We just want you to visit.
This is Philosophy versus Improv, where two sages try to teach each other a thing or two, and maybe you, the audience, get something out of it as well.
We're back with a no-guest episode. I'm Mark Linsenmeyer, your philosophy caretaker today.
Okay. And this is Bill Arnett, your improv docent, we'll say, as we travel the museum.
Okay. I think I've only ever heard that word from you. I don't docent? Know that I know any docents in real life. What is who is a real life docent? Who do you emulate as a docent?
Let's say you had a historic home, and there certainly are tour guides, mm-hmm. but then let's say you wanted to rent that historic home for some event or something. The docent would be the representative of the historic home, and they certainly know where the bathroom is and know where and probably know some history too, but I think it's almost like a junior caretaker.
All right.
I'm very curious. I mean, we have the power of the internet at our fingertips. Why aren't we Googling?
We don't. In so improv scenes, do you stop? Is it part of the improv? Can the character, wait a second, let me Google something. And maybe they pretend as in character that they're Googling something else, but really they're Googling to try to figure out the next thing that they should say in the scene.
You know, I mean, the world we're living in, I think, you know, cell phones are becoming a part of everyday world to the point that you can be having a conversation with somebody and it's socially kind of acceptable to just glance at your phone and make sure you don't have any message. You know, it's almost like, and if someone did have a message like, oh, I'm sorry, let me just grab this. You know, that's socially acceptable, you know?
All right. Well, just a second. I'm just going to see if I have a...
That's fine. I'm not going to kick.
Oh, I have a recording coming up with Bill. That's what my alert said. Right. This. It's alerting me that to what I'm doing right now. It's saying, focus. Don't look at your goddamn phone. Get back to the call that I just warned you about as phone. And you shouldn't have had to look at me to have known to focus. It said all that. I feel like not enough information is coming at us through the digital stream. We have to add more through implication. So when I get a little beep, 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 I don't just take those as little bits and bytes. I take those as challenges, as essays. As a peon, perhaps.
Well, you'd be happy to know that I have, after having been on the show for a while and having had discussions and met some fabulous guests, dug a little bit into some philosophy things.
Whoa!
And I have a scenario. What are they called? A hypothetical. I don't know what they call
a thought experiment.
A thought experiment. Maybe.
Well, tell me what it
and,
is.
Well, that's just it. I mean, you might shoot it down immediately. So, well, that's actually somebody already did that or any answer in between. But it's kind of similar to that thought experiment that I read somewhere about if you see a drowning person and don't do anything, you're a terrible person. But then there are people drowning in debt, people drowning in hunger all around us, and we do very little around that. But because it didn't interfere with our day. We don't. The whole notion that we're all made pretty immoral. I forgot who said that. And I probably got it wrong, but there was someone somewhat recently who they had a thought experiment about that. You see somebody drowning on the way to work in a pond in Central Park. So of course you save them. Okay. This is someone else's thought experiment.
So Peter Singer is a famous utilitarian who I talked to on the Parsons Examine Life. And we actually did talk about this drowning boy thing. I think the idea was that, yes, of course you would do this. You would save a person. But for an equal amount of effort, says Singer, you could, you know, so you're sacrificing, say, your good shoes that are going to get ruined by saving this person. And you don't think anything of it. You know, how much money is that? $40. Okay. They're on sale. So wouldn't you just then want to spend $40, every $40 that you have, to save somebody in some foreign country? And so it was about how we are irrational in what we consider worth doing morally because we don't pay attention to the equal harms that we are doing by letting situations persist that we could, with appropriate knowledge, rectify. And of course, we don't always have the appropriate knowledge, but now the internet, We kind of do.
Yes.
It's not that hard.
Here's my thought experiment. You get a call from your doctor after a checkup. I'm like, Mark, everything is just fine. In fact, everything is more than fine. We, and anyone listening, you don't have to be Mark. You can just put yourself in Mark's position here. So listener, you get a call from the doctor after a checkup. Like, not only is everything fine, everything's more than fine. We've been doing some, we did an advanced blood test, and we found a protein in your blood that is unique. And we believe this protein could cure of, you know, pick your favorite horrible, debilitating disease. You know, let's say I've got heart disease in my family. So let's say it can actually reverse arterial sclerosis. This thing could save mega lives. Now, it could take years to figure out how to engineer it. It's a very complex protein. But if we could just draw your blood, just whatever the regular blood draw is, a pint a month or whatever the Red Cross guidelines are, we could start saving lives tomorrow. Here's my question for you. It is your blood. Technically, we can't just take it from you. What would you charge for a pint of blood a month?
I'm not sure why, as a DMV employee, you're asking me. I mean, I thought usually they just ask, do you want to sign the organ donor? And yeah. I'm fine with that. But a pint of blood per month.
Per month, yeah.
I would just say that, you know, if clearly people's lives are going to be saved, you know, you don't have to pay me anything. You should pay maybe those people whose lives would be saved if they don't have enough.
We'll give you an OJ and a muffin. Just a standard blood donation. yeah. Well, I think and people I've asked to, that's generally it. If this thing is going to save a lot of lives, you can have it for free. All right, now let's rethink. Okay, the doctor doesn't say, you know what? We got it wrong. It's not going to cure heart disease. It's, you know, people with tennis elbow. It could really, really help people with mild to moderate joint conditions. Now, what do you want to get paid for it?
Well, Bill, I'm not sure why you're asking this as a checkout clerk at the Osco. I thought that I was just going to buy my my Band-Aids and my diapers that I got for I got a kid at home. I mean,
is the unexamined life even worth living, customer?
I could use some help buying these Pampers. So I think people with tennis elbow are probably pretty well to do. I don't play tennis. I mean, I pay my taxes, but I don't play tennis. That's above and beyond. That's crazy. That's like for the people of leisure. So I definitely would want some dough to help the tennis elbow.
So there's an inverse relationship between how helpful your blood is and how much money you want from it. And the less helpful it is, the more you're going to want to get paid for your inconvenience and your blood. I mean, you're going to be down a pint for a couple of days. All right, so that's the baseline, and I think that's.
Well, let me ask you, Bill.
Okay,
I've got some friends. They're very wealthy, very very wealthy vampires, and they really like Arnett blood. There's something special about Arnett blood.
I got a sweet tooth. It's probably real tasty.
They don't want to kill you. I mean, they might, you know, if you completely deny them, they might track you down in your bed and rip your throat open. But probably they would much rather have it in manageable doses that will keep you alive, keep you happy. They don't even want to, you know, they might, under normal circumstances, they might like ensorcel you and make you their servant. And then you willingly feed them.
Renfield.
But that's just so, it's just so time consuming to manage followers like that. And they really don't, they're not in that business anymore. They're tired of this. How much would you like to get paid? They really have a lot of money, a lot of investments from centuries that are built up. How much would you like to be paid for your delicious blood to go to these wealthy, wealthy vampires?
Well, I worry about what the vampires would do with the rest of their time. Are they going around murdering people? You know, am I helping out villains? You know, I mean, I like the idea that maybe if I give them my blood willingly for cash, it will, you know, sate their hunger and perhaps leave other people alone. And in that regard, you know, they can cover my cell phone bill. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. we can come up with a number, but I don't know. Do I want to milk them? Do I want to really bilk some change out of them if it means that they'll go elsewhere and actually maybe attack people? And, you know,
I mean, your blood is really good. It does. It's so rich. You must have such a good diet, such good genes that they about 10 people otherwise they might have to attack and suck from. So you definitely be saving some suffering from other people. But I'm curious about this whole, oh, what would they do with the rest of the time? Would they be going around killing people? If they kill to eat, are you some kind of anti-vampire racist? Do you think that just because somebody might, when they're really hungry, bite your neck and kill you, that they just are malevolent?
They get no joy out of terrorizing the population of the village at the base of the castle.
I mean, they do get a lot of joy out of that, but it's not, it's more just like, I love blood. Mm! And I guess the tears and the fear makes it a little richer, but somehow, I guess maybe that is the thing with your blood, is you're such a depressing, such a tearful person that you that just packs it in there. And so they don't need the ordinary suffering that you have the weight of the Arnett on your shoulders.
Well, if they truly are well to do, I think I should probably get compensated to, like, I don't know, 80 grand a year, 100 grand a year. I should be able to live comfortably off giving them my blood. A life for a life.
Do you think you maybe want to consult with your wife whether 80 grand a year is enough spending money? I mean, maybe she doesn't want to have to work either.
Well, then 200 grand. I mean, let's...
Okay. I mean, you might want to ask your kids if they want to go to substandard schools.
Well, that now we're getting onto the whole, like, do you do more damage to your kids by giving them a ton of money than you help? But that's a whole other topic. Yes, I would take the money. I would take some quantity of money that I deem fair based on their means and the good I hope it could do. So the next part of the thought, we're still preamble, Mark. We haven't even gotten to the thing yet.
This is normal philosophy pacing.
I've learned a lot. I've learned all the tricks. So we've established that there is some inverse relationship between what my effort is worth depending on how much good it does. And if it does a lot of good, I'm willing to put in a lot of effort. But if it doesn't do a lot of good, well, then you gotta make it worth my while.
All right. To an extent, though, because the way that you were putting it is just a normal amount of blood, a pint. Whereas if it's like, oh, but there are more vampires, they're willing to get, you know, there are more, or let's not make the vampires, you know, there are more people with this disease, they're going to die. Wouldn't you like, you know, give three times the amount, not to death, but like to serious sickness. Is that worth it for you to do the good, all that good? Or would you at least want to be better compensated?
Under a doctor's advisement, I would take definitely under doctor's advisement. If they got to do two pints, you know, and they will know how long it takes for blood to regenerate. You know, we'd get a whole schedule out here. And hopefully once you get that first batch done, then you only have to worry about people who are newly diagnosed. Once you've got all the current diagnosed, you know, I'm kind of working around the experiment. I acknowledge that I'm trying to think of, well, that's simply not how it would work, is it? They would.
I think also what makes you regenerate your blood faster, like really any stimulant. So like cocaine, I think you get your blood back faster. So part of this deal is you'd have to become
That's going to start getting more expensive. That's not my.
That would also make your blood even richer because you would pass on those benefits, those cocaine benefits to your
recipients. I'm all about depressants. I'm all about, the downers. The handful of times I've had morphine in the hospital or something under doctor's supervision. It's like, I get it. And this isn't even the good stuff. You know what I'm saying? It's like, man, this is great.
Well, you're in luck because downers, by depressing your brain normally, if you're thinking a lot, you're using up a lot of blood. But if you slow it down, All that
all
blood
right, now we're talking. I can be a junkie.
For other, I can be other a junkie. Uses. You have extra blood and you generate it extra fast if you're, if you just like, okay, you know, put a tourniquet around your hands so you're not using your hands anymore. And just anything that will slow down and make parts of you numb.
Well, I would like to think that everybody in the world, because this would certainly be in the newspapers, while they would be honored by my ultimate sacrifice, they would also understand if I'm like, I'm going to, I'm okay pushing this a little bit beyond medical wisdom, but I really don't want to endanger myself. And I think people would understand.
All right. Well, I'm going to start tweeting. Bill was willing to give a lot of blood until he found out trans people might receive it. And then he shut it down. That's how I interpret what you just said.
That's preposterous. That's preposterous. All right. So phase two.
Phase two.
We've established that there's, again, with little to no scientific research, asking my friends over beers, that's the extent of my data set, that there is an inverse relationship between how helpful my work is and how much I want to get paid for it. Now we get into the self-help world and the Tony Robbinses and the life coaches, and all that stuff can get amazingly expensive very quickly. Yeah, there's a book, but if you really want the good stuff, you got to go on the retreat. And once you go on the retreat, you learn about the fellowship. And if you want to join the Better Yourself Fellowship, well, there's also a multi-level marketing sales aspect to it. You know, it's like suddenly these things get very, very expensive, yet people are willing to pay it. So by using the inverse proportionality, the Arnett principle, can we then say that any self-help thing, the more it charges, the less effective it is? And that free self-help is actually the best self-help.
No, well,
or moderately priced self-help is actually more effective.
I think we were starting to say, I guess the ambiguity here is, are we asking about market rates? Or are we asking about sort of the morally correct choice? Because clearly drug companies don't charge. Our drug is helping a lot of people. Let's charge less. No, they say we are necessary. We have cornered a market. We will charge as much as we can possibly get away with.
Yes. Morality and drug companies. Maybe the only time that's appeared in the same sentence. Just FYI.
So, yeah, you're talking about whereas originally you were saying, what would you as the moral individual be willing to accept for your blood, knowing that it's for various purposes? I like to take advantage of that because I tell people that their blood is for a good cause and then I don't have to pay them for it. And then I use it for like haunted houses. I use it for cosplay. I like to have real blood for those things. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't you think it's just more realistic to have real blood?
Well, you know, reality, Mark, some would say it's all a projection of your mind and that you can actually manifest a reality. How cool was that? How amazing is that?
I feel like I'm willing to pay a lot to hear more of that.
Your own reality. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of levels. There's a lot of levels. And I wish just a workbook would do it. I wish we could unlock the secrets with just a workbook.
Could I start with a workbook at least?
Well, we can definitely start with the workbook, but then there's probably going to the knowledge would require you to participate in some activities. It just can't get across. It just can't get across.
Let's just go through the first couple pages of the workbook together. Sure. How about that?
Sure.
Yeah. All right. So this is,
and you're not allowed to have a bathroom break once you start.
Oh. Okay. Just FYI. Okay. I can live with that.
Okay.
All right. So do you want to be a whole new you? Yes, I'm.
We're starting off easy.
Do you want to develop better self-esteem? I mean, I'm kind of arrogant, so I'm not sure. Yeah. Though I think self-esteem, yes. All right.
Mm-hmm. What is arrogance but a projection of the esteem you wish you had?
I feel better about my arrogance already. All right. This is really helping.
Well, arrogance is something that people tell you. You are arrogant. You are, you know, I don't think anyone ever says of themselves they are arrogant. Do you think lay awake at night thinking I'm so arrogant?
I mean, I I lay awake at night thinking so many things.
Let's get back to the workbook. We got a lot to do here. Clearly, we've uncovered some things.
Like you have some unlocked potential or some
locked potential?
Some locked potential. I feel like I have some locked and some unlocked, and some of those that has a lock. You could probably pick that lock.
There are some studies. I don't have them at my fingertips. I can email you them later. But studies have been done by prestigious universities. Take my word for it.
Okay.
And these studies mention that the only difference between you, me, anybody out there, and Mozart, and Picasso, and the Bronte sisters, that the only difference, fraction of 1%, one half of 1%. Otherwise, we are identical. We are identical to all those powerful, powerful people. Can you believe it?
I often think of myself as a third Bronte sister.
Mm-hmm. Or a brother or just sister. Or
I mean, they're known as sisters. I like to think, so if you have a mixed
group. I'm cool with trans people. I'm very cool with trans people. You may have heard otherwise.
I just think that we should, if you have a group that is of mixed gender, it's okay to use the feminine to just refer to them. So I like, you know, the brothers, and you find out actually some of them are sisters. Like, isn't that,
sure.
Is that how it goes? Hey, guys.
Guys is becoming.
Okay. The third trans. Bronte guy. Hey, guys. Yeah. Hey, Brontes.
Sibling. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Less than 1/2 of 1%, Mark. And chances are it's nothing you were born with, but something you refuse of yourself. You refuse to let that 1/2 of 1% out.
But I want to let it out. What can I do? Do you want to move into
We're only on question four. Okay. We're only on four of a book, of a workbook. Okay. Do you see the power of this system? Do you see the power of the system already?
I mean, I look at the bottom of the page and it says to turn the page, insert a quarter. Is that a normal for a workbook?
Yeah. These things aren't free.
I think I have a quarter.
This knowledge isn't free. I could have a job at a Fortune 500 company. I could be doing all those amazing things with my unlocked potential, but I'm choosing to spread the word. I'm choosing to spread the word. And I will need your credit card number as we go along. Workbook actually isn't free either.
Yeah, I mean, I turn the page and it says to turn the next page. I mean, I haven't read the page yet, but it says to turn the next page. I have to insert an actual silver dollar right into the book. I don't have a silver dollar. I don't think those are very common. Could I go to the bank?
Know what else is uncommon? You know what else is uncommon?
What?
Beethoven. Beethoven's
uncommon.
I mean,
there's probably a lot of Beethovens. It's
Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Uncommon. Uncommon.
Yeah. Yeah, there's only
one of
them.
It is your search for the uncommon that will help you unlock the uncommon inside of you. Do you see that? It's a metaphor. It's a metaphor. I don't know how you did in high school English class, but
not many people have eyes that are different colors. David Bowie, I think, has like a green eye and a blue eye. So
I've read some research about that. I've read some research about that. There is research.
If I look for those people, then I can unlock the potential. Searching for the uncommon, then maybe I could get a different color eye.
Well, you know, that's a very physical thing. I'm thinking more spiritual, more psycho-emotional.
Mm.
I'm going to throw a new word on you. I'll throw a new word on you if you're okay with this. Okay. Craniofascism. It sounds like a bad word. It should be a bad word,
yeah,
shouldn't it?
That sounds like it. Fascism is bad.
Fascism, in its history, is certainly not leveraged very well. But it's this idea that the state also controls, is in partnership with the means of production. They don't own it. They don't take it over. It's a partnership. But the state is ultimately in control. Mm. The state is your mind. The means of production is your body. Now, does your mind have total control over your body?
No, I mean, I piss myself now and again.
We all do. We all do.
Not even on purpose. I mean, there's sometimes on purpose, but most of the time, not on purpose.
Do you ever number two yourself on purpose?
I mean, not that I want to talk about.
Yeah. See, we're not, but what we need is a partnership. And that, you know, Mussolini could not have been Mussolini if it wasn't for all those big business people lining up next to him. It's a partnership where everybody wins. And for your body to win, it wants to be healthy. It wants to be satisfied. It wants its needs met. For your brain to be healthy, it needs to be stimulated. It needs exercise. And part of that exercise is doing the work. The work. Capital T, capital W, the work. You'll be exposed to this later in the workbook, that phrasing.
You know, I do have a silver dollar. It's in the junk drawer. I just remembered. So I think I can see the next page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go for it.
Let's see. I mean, I haven't read all the previous. Okay, I'm just going to skip ahead. I feel like I'm ready for the third page that I had to unlock with a silver dollar. This is Islamofascism. Is that, why does that say Islamofascism? Is that just a type of?
We're going to dive into all kinds of different language. It's about the language. We need to establish a language.
Oh, I see. Okay. So there's like Greco-Roman fascism.
I read a study, again, by a prestigious university. A very notable person wrote a study that said that the reason why the Roman Empire never achieved algebra is because their number system never suggested that they needed algebra. Their very language shut them off from this incredibly powerful tool.
So they needed fascists to open up that door. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Well, it's Islam fascism. It's not Islam.
Oh, Islam. Okay.
I slam it, you know. And that's slamming is a word we use in the program. You'll hear other people.
I mean,
use
it's
it.
Just, it seems
you'll
a
hear
little
it around in the chat rooms.
Misleading.
What did you slam today? What was slammed? I slammed at work today. I slammed around the house. You know, I slammed.
Okay. On the next page, I see Hindu it. Hindu it now. Why do you include the word Hindu? It just seems like needlessly provocative.
Well, our fearless leader is not afraid of invoking other faiths and other religions and other ways of life. And it's to kind of give the work that spiritual air that it deserves, that it deserves. So we're going to use the language. We talked about language. We're going to use the language of other established spiritual groups to give credence to the products that we produce. And this is all a product. This is technology. This is brain technology. That's a way of thinking about it.
All right. I see the next section is get your Jesus freak on. So I now understand how to take this, that it's not.
Yeah.
I guess I'm a little confused that it is connoting my ambivalence about traditional religion to maybe say, I guess all those different faiths were shooting towards this one system that you were presenting of craniofascism. Is that, am I reading that right?
You may wonder, wow, this is so powerful. It must be very expensive. Clearly, myself and my associates have the power to help so many people. It is such powerful, life-changing technology, they must want an arm and a leg for it. I mean, wouldn't you? Isn't that what you want? If you had the secret of some secret of the stock market, wouldn't you charge millions of dollars for your secrets?
I mean, I'm just looking at the thickness of this workbook to get to the second page. I had to do the quarter to get to the third page. I do the silver dollar. The next pages I've gotten to see these other headings. I just had to write an IOU.
Well, we're going to need your routing. We're going to need a routing number, a bank routing number, and we're going to run that before we even unlock the page.
It does seem it's sort of exponentially going up. So, yes, I thought an arm and a leg might eventually be called for, and I'm not sure I'm willing to part with an arm and a leg. Could I just choose one?
By the time you get to that decision, you will have unlocked so much brain power, so much potential, that decision will be meaningless. It'll be meaningless. It will be obvious. The choice will be obvious.
I could grow a new arm with my mind.
Perhaps.
If you have total control over your body through cranial fascism, then you can make yourself, your body, do anything. You can unlock.
Why don't you grow a leg where your arm was?
I mean, I don't want to freak people out. I'd rather just have a replacement arm if you make me pay an arm. That's of equivalence. I don't need a super buff arm.
People do balk at the price. I'm not going to lie. But we are saving lives. That's got to be expensive, right? You can't do that on the cheap.
And for just a cup of coffee, you could save the cost of... It's not even just the cost of a cup of... An actual cup of coffee, you could save a life in Africa, I'm told.
There are more calories in a cup of coffee than some of those starving children get in the whole day. I mean, cream and sugar. I mean, let's be honest, probably not.
So when I order at Starbucks, I say one for me and one for the Holy Ghost. And then I just put it at an empty seat and I just kind of wait.
Now, legally and as far as business goes, it's actually better for Starbucks to just give away coffee in starving countries than give away the money. Believe it or not. Believe it. It's actually more cost effective. It's more cost effective to actually just do business in those countries.
Yeah.
At a highly subsidized rate than it is to actually feed people. But that's just the business case. That's, you got to look at the numbers to see that out. It seems counterintuitive.
And you don't want to give people things because then you give somebody a fish, they just have a fish. You have to make them buy a fish and then they really value that fish.
They'll take care of it. To know that you put something into it. You got to give to get. I don't need to read a study from a notable university professor to know that you got to give to get.
Okay. I've read some studies about giving and getting about, you know, in philosophy, how you got to give and there's getting, and professors might talk about that. Sometimes they talk about how they give so much of their energy to their students and they just have to write these shitty books to support themselves. It's just mostly complaining. The philosophical literature on getting and getting, so that I'm done with that.
We tried to put a $500 hold on your credit card. It's just standard operating procedure, just what they would do at a hotel. You know, it's very, very standard stuff, and they couldn't clear that balance. So we're gonna have to stop for now. The knowledge will stop. The empowering, life-changing, I really want to help you. I want to help the world. But what I have is so valuable and will change so many lives for the better. But credit card.
I feel like when I get something in the abstract, when I get just the outline, it inspires me to pursue. I don't necessarily need the name brand. So I feel like I understand enough of what's been thrown at me that I can just work on my own.
Well, suit yourself. I don't imagine you growing any extra limbs anytime soon, but
yeah, you just wait. I'm gonna just chop off a little toe here and start with that, just because I don't want
to
risk.
Do you think for a second that if you just went to any random church in your community seeking knowledge and enlightenment, they would just let you in? That they would welcome you, that they would let you look at their holy book, that they would let you sing their songs? Do you think they would just let you in?
Mostly. I mean, not everybody, but yeah, pretty much.
If I just went down to the local Methodist church and said, what's going on here? Can I have some knowledge? Can I have some personal growth and power? You think they would just say, sure thing. See you Sunday morning. You think that?
I should try it. I don't know. Again, I heard about religions and I sort of like work it on my own. So I put my own set of beliefs together. I went to church a little as a kid and seemed like it was really long and boring. So I don't really go near those places, but I feel spiritual. I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. I got a lot of soul in me. And so I just kind of work on myself according to my own pace.
If you called your credit card company, they'd lift your limit. we had lift your spending limit. That's all we really need is just to lift that spending.
All right. Well, that's no problem. Least, here.
A little lifter cap, I bet.
Okay, so I got to just do the 800 number that's on the back of this, and that's they recognize
it. We can pause now, Mark. I'm not sure if you want to. And see, you know me. I love calling the 800 number on the back of a credit card. I think that's hilarious. And the fact that you're going there, honestly, I'm a proud father. I'm a proud father knowing that.
I was going to make it interesting enough. I don't know.
But yeah, let's dive in and find out. I feel dumb for stopping.
That's plenty. I don't know what kind of idiot this person is.
Well, I got to kind of turn the tables and inject all kinds of things into the scene that I felt were pertinent towards this.
Sure.
Towards this theorem I'm working on.
Well, yes. Let's make less silly and more explicit some of the points that you were trying to make.
I really do bet if you were to go just pick a random church in your town, mainstream Christian church or a temple or probably more reform temple than I bet if you were just asking, they'd be more than happy to answer your questions, probably even give you a Bible if you asked. I bet they would.
Sure.
And they wouldn't ask for any money in return.
You ever done a Bible crawl where you go to all the churches in town and just see how many Bibles you can get?
See how many you get? I mean, if there's any college students out there looking for a project, I think comparative religion, it's like, what religion?
And then you publicly burn them all at the end of the night. Yeah. And then they don't give you more Bibles.
Yeah. How dare you be so generous? Yeah. No, that was a podcast I was listening to about someone who had gotten caught up in some self-help guru kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you couldn't help but feel the adjacency to religion.
Sure.
You know, and in fact, some do get quite David Koresh. You know, some cults are religious cults and some cults are secular cults, you know. So I couldn't help but feel like, man, what knowledge are they imparting onto people that's beyond a therapist, beyond, you know, any of the more traditional free and or covered by insurance routes of enlightenment, the library, and just, it's like, there's a lot of stuff out there for free, but you got to kind of do the work, you know, as opposed to some turnkey solution that I think people are now suddenly willing to pay an arm and a leg for.
Well, I was just in the news today has been the famous, apparently one of the biggest mega churches, Joel Osteen.
Yeah.
Because there was an attack in one of his churches. And I just, in one of the descriptions, I didn't know anything about this guy. You know, I sort of know what he looks like.
You see his face. Yeah.
Yes. But apparently he's sometimes criticized because he doesn't talk about doctrine and he doesn't talk about sin. And so that actually makes me feel like, oh, well, you know, those are the things that I hate about most preachers. So maybe this is good. But now Googling him, I see he's one of the more prominent figures associated with prosperity theology. So it might be exactly what you were talking about of, if you have faith, you can, it's not exactly what you're talking about, but within the realm of magic.
It came up.
Yes.
It definitely came up.
You use your faith to rake in the cash.
And there have to be people, there are so many self-help books these days, you know, and like it's some are, I think, more honest than others. But there just has to be, if you really believe in your message, wouldn't it be free? Wouldn't you sell it inexpensively? Wouldn't you offer it up for free? If you thought your message was so powerful, if you thought your blood could save lives, wouldn't you give it away for free? Or, you know, at cost or enough to live a humble life, you know, to know that you helped all these people. So maybe deep down inside, they know it's garbage or they don't care. Or the green in front of their eyes makes all, yes, the glittering prizes and endless compromises shatter the illusion of integrity.
Whoa.
To quote, you'll get that. And many of our listeners as well. Let's be frank. We know who's listening to two guys talk about.
I'm so close to singing the invisible airwaves crackle with light.
There we go.
Yes, because we're old. That's yes. I think that's what that comes down
old
to.
Enough. Old
sorry.
Enough.
Sorry. Yeah. Maybe there's a. Yeah. And I'm glad that your little Rush reference just distracted me from whatever point I was going to make
in
a serious response to what you've been saying. So now I just have those things.
If people really believed in their message, wouldn't they?
Oh, yes. So I have an anecdote, which I don't think I've ever told this on a podcast before, that I went to the Scientology church at one point during college.
Okay.
There was in Ann Arbor where I went to school. Mm-hmm. They had a Church of Scientology right on the on the main square in downtown, which has since closed. Yay. Mm-hmm. But I had read Dianetics on my own in high school, and it seemed a little silly, but I was like, you know, I don't know. Maybe this is a thing. And I asked them, why are you thought of as such a, like a this was before, you know, all the stuff came out and whatever, the recent, this is in the late, maybe 1989 or when I started, but you know, apparently why does everybody consider you guys total crooks? And why do you, you know, charge all this money? And
yeah.
And they were like, well, exactly the question you asked, if this is so vital for a man's continued existence, why aren't you just giving it away? And they were like, well, it's just the practicalities of if there's somebody going to meet with you to be your auditor, you got to think about their schedule. So, you know, it's possible to do this for free on an informal basis, but really, you know, you got to be here at a certain time. So of course you got to pay people for their labor, you know, it just all. So I left and never came back, but they did send me literature for years, as long as they could get a hold of me. Like, are you sure you're comfortable with yourself? Are you, you know, they tried to play on my insecurities.
Yeah. There was a Scientology center here in Chicago, and it was in a building, not right downtown, but in the urban sprawl before you get into the houses with yards. So it was still in the, you know, built up Chicago area. And it was on one of these intersections where there's three roads, an east, west, a north, south, and then a slanty, an angled road. So it makes, like the Flatiron building in New York City, it makes a very pointy intersection. And one of the buildings is like a triangle. And in the ground floor of that triangle building was the Dianetics office. And if you walk by the front on the main street of the triangle, it's all glittery and shiny and white. And they got the signs and the posters, and it looks like a thriving business.
So this is or is this?
Well, this was like 98.
Okay,
A while ago. I'm not sure if it's still there. I don't know. But if you walked on the side street on the other side and kind of saw like the non-front-facing, the non-client-facing, like the back room, the break room window, and like you could look into and like see the back, it's just a mess. Just piles of boxes and papers everywhere. And it's like, this is the last thing I would I would think the Dianetics office would just be this pristine, you know, it's like, it is as messy as you or I.
I guess they're not clear.
Yeah. The office manager is not a client. We have a.
Because once you've, you know, cleared out, it's just like that movie Limitless where you take the drug and it just clears out all your blockages. That's all that's keeping you from being a genius. It's all that's keeping you from just achieving the most impressive feats is just you're holding yourself back.
And it's your fault if you don't do it. So if you screw up, you're a loser. Loser. Yeah. and that's a whole other side of cults and a whole other side of that whole kind of brainwashing kind of thing. You know, that was the whole, when I said you couldn't go to the bathroom in our little scene. Mm. I had a friend, well, an acquaintance, who had done some of those self-help. It wasn't EST, but it was something in the EST universe, where you go to these seminars and part of the thing is they don't let you use the bathroom. There are like allotted breaks and they control your life down to the minute when you can eat, when you can pee, when you can talk. And it's like, I'm sure a lot of people feel like it's just so much more efficient this way, but it's actually a regarded form of brainwashing.
Well, the joke was on your character because my character was using the bathroom the whole scene.
Yes, it's like, yeah,
just
jokes on you.
It's just a steady drip.
I've been pissing this whole time. It's like,
Why did you want to have our meeting in the pool?
Okay.
I just wanted to be able to just feel a little more free with myself.
Well played.
I only do interviews in the pool.
You won this round. Those are some of my favorite. Just like I completely debase myself to win, you know, and it's like, yeah. I ate till I puked. That means I won. It's like, sure, pal. Enjoy the trophy.
Well, there's got to be. I was thinking about Cool Hand Luke with the egg eating contest.
Yeah. The eggs, yeah.
And I don't remember the entire context of that in the film, but wasn't it like, I'm such a badass, I can eat so many eggs? Like, was that kind of the...
It was like 2 dozen hard-boiled eggs or the 3 dozen hard-boiled eggs. And someone bet him, of course, that he could or couldn't do it. And he got George Kennedy with his shirt off, cheering him on. Someone later told me that movie is regarded in certain communities as highly homoerotic. And it's like, yeah, sweaty men on the road crew with their various levels of disrobement, sleeping together in the bunkhouse and just having just the guys having a good time.
Yeah, now I'm trying to think about the overlap between sort of sports competition movies and homoeroticism. And I'm not, certainly they're like any sporting event. There's opportunities to ogle the fine physiqued individuals doing they're doing.
Fellas in the shower.
Or just the beauty of the athlete as they hit the, of whatever gender, as they hit the ball over the net, as they hit the ball in the net, as they, just something that is involves their arms being up in the air.
Volleyball scene in Top Gun. There was Al Franken had a joke about the following congressmen have showered with black men. And he lists these Republican senators and members of Congress. They've all showered with black men. And it's like, oh, wait a minute. They were athletes. Yeah, they played football in college or they were a pro basketball player. It's like, oh, yeah, I guess they didn't.
But to return to the eating as a sport, I think that could be a whole philosophy topic of what, you know, is there a movie like Sylvester Stallone in Over the Top about arm wrestling, about competitive hot dog eating, for instance?
I bet there's some in the works. I bet there's probably 10 scripts in various stages of production floating around Hollywood that involve competitive eating. My limited knowledge of how Hollywood works is that there are options out on 10 to 20 competitive eating movies right now.
I'm looking up on IMDb.com if it ever comes up for me. Is there a movie called, for instance, Iron Gut? Is that a movie?
Sometimes they are good about what's in production or what's in development hell, as they say.
There are some episodes. Iron Guts is an episode of Psycho Pass. I don't know what that is.
Okay.
It is something translated from Japanese, I think. Mm-hmm. There is something, The Gridiron Gang, featuring Dwayne The Rock Johnson from 2006. That is apparently a film. I think that might have been about competitive eating. I'm just going to make a leap here because I've never actually heard of that. And the gridiron is often known, you know,
For a grill. For the barbecue
exactly.
Grill.
Yeah. I mean, what else could it be referring to?
Mm-hmm. And in fact, if it's anything else, I bet they stole it from the barbecue grill meaning.
Right.
Hey, that football field looks like a barbecue grill with all the lines painted on it.
And you know, I mean, you think that what matters is who wins the official game, but it's the eating contest afterward where the real gambling goes on, where the real
informal,
you know, the status, there's, you know, kind of nominal status for being like, you get the most touchdowns, whatever, the Heisman Trophy. But then you can really tell the state of a person when they get home and they have an eating contest with their family.
They all want that John Madden turkey leg at the end of the game that goes to the MVP.
Do you hear about the things that have come out about John Madden and his in-home eating contests?
His bus.
That he would make his children and his wife daily, pretty much every meal. It wasn't just eat a meal. It was an active eating contest. Speed, volume. I think there is a film that is being made about that.
Not to besmirch the late Mr. Madden, I bet he did A-okay at eating contests. I think he was winning one called Life, I think.
What is the perfect name for the John Madden biopic eating contest abuse film?
It's got to be something on a bus or something on wheels.
Daddy Gut Dearest? That might be a little.
I don't think his estate is going to sign off on that one.
All right.
So what do you think, Mark? Did you like my question? Was it decent? Was it
summarize the question?
Evocative.
It had to do with something about the value.
Well, if we think we could help more people, then we'll do it for free. But if we think it wouldn't help a lot of people, then it was suddenly we want more money for it. It suddenly is more. It's more expensive to do less.
Sure. Like when companies, I think that's kind of when companies ask me for feedback or something. Unless it's actually going to make them make something better for me in the future, unless I feel like there's a feedback loop, I'm not going to do that. Pay me. If you want to do market research, pay me something.
Yeah.
Don't, you know, give me a coupon or whatever if I fill out your survey. Don't just ask me to fill out your survey.
I agree 1,000%. But again, if it was, yeah, I think it's interesting. And then the other ways in which how we value things versus what kind of money we expect from them. Is that whole thing that got into the self-help world where it's like, if you really believed in your product, wouldn't you not charge so much? You, I don't know.
Dear Tyson, I have enjoyed your chicken wings for many years, but if you believed in your product, you would make them cheaper so I could buy more of them and have many more Tyson chicken wings in my gut. I try to have eating contests with your wings on a daily basis in my family, but our pocketbooks prohibit us from eating as many wings as we could fit in our bellies.
When you factor in not only taste, but also health, I think the utility of Tyson fried chicken products is priced pretty accurately. I think the market has set that right where it needs to be.
When I get the Tyson wings, I get them with the bones in them, and I use it. It's like I use every part of the chicken wing. I'm just like one of those Islamo fascists. I think that's what they call them.
There we go. Okay. Good save. Good save.
All right. Thanks, Bill. I sure learned a lot from you today.
And I learned a lot from you, Mark. This was fun.
And scene.
Hope you enjoyed the show. Get more at philosophyimprov.com. If you want to support the show and not have to hear any more commercials and get our post-game segments, you can see options to do that at philosophyimprov.com/support. Thanks. Maybe I should sell my soul. Bankrupt. Bankrupt. Bankrupt.